Morning, church. I love the legacy language. I think on a weekend like this, the idea of legacy, we're all living in legacy. We're all living in this legacy of people that chose to stand in the gap and give their life so that we wouldn't have to give ours. People that stood in the gap and gave their life for freedom that we get to experience as we sit here. People that resonate with John 15:13 that says there's no greater love than someone that would lay down their life for someone else. I think Memorial Day is my Memorial Day weekend, and Memorial Day itself is my favorite kind of one of the holidays we celebrate because it's so close to the gospel. It's so close to why we're here, because Jesus did the same for us, right? He laid down his life that we would have freedom. And there have been people that have stood in the gap and laid down their life. I mean, think about it for a second, you guys. I don't come into this space going, telling my wife, hey, I wonder if I'll make it home today. I don't come into this space under the cover of darkness because we're not allowed to gather and we're not allowed to have these moments and celebrate a senior class that is following Jesus with their faith. We step into these moments in freedom because it's been provided to us. And that's legacy that's been handed down to us. And we get to bask in it and get to live in it and get to celebrate it. And so I hope your celebrations this weekend, I hope they're as robust as what the weekend is and what it deserves. And I also hope that we can just sit and go, man, I'm grateful for those that have gone before us. And I'm thankful for the difference they make in my life. So could we do this? Could we just give a big round of applause and just as a gratitude and thank you? I want to welcome in those of you on our online family, wherever you happen to be. I saw Ann was in Hawaii. We're all jealous, just so you know. And the Lentz family down in Tucson, welcome to you. And also Baghdad, welcome to you. Glad you're there. Glad you're joining us. Glad we're journeying alongside one another. Excited for what's happening out there and how that continues to grow. Paulden, enjoy your breakfast. We're all jealous too, but welcome to you and glad you guys are there too. But could we give one more hand just for our family online? Let them know we love them. If you're new to this space and you're going, why? Man, we've clapped like 15 times. What is with the clapping, right? Like, we just like to celebrate. It's actually one of our core values to who we are, is that we will create space for celebration. Because we need to remember the goodness of God. We need to remember the goodness. I don't know about you, but there's too many days that are just, there's too much bad in days. And if I don't stop and remember the good, I can get lost in the bad. And so we celebrate. That's what we do as a church. It's one of our values. Another value is that we believe that God created, except for, I got to point out, Raymond, you wore that shirt just so I would see you. I wish we could get a camera. He has a Manchester City shirt on. It is the most disrespectful thing he could have wore to church today. I'm just going to let you know. It's not my fault if you have a flat tire on the way home. But I don't even know what I was talking about. All people, even Raymond, all people. But no, all people matter to God, so they matter to us. And so one of the things that, and that's not just words, we create space. And I was reminded of this week. I got to meet a man named Michael, right? And I was in Starbucks, I was studying, and Michael comes up and I see this hand waving in front of me, right? Because I got AirPods in and I'm lost in what I'm doing. And he says, hey, I just had to say hi. He said, I was at church last week. He said, you just need to know I haven't been in church for 30 years. He said, but I came and he was just saying, I just want to say thank you. I just want to say thank you for what you had to say and let you know that I'll be back. But church, that's what this is about. There's somebody in Michael's situation of life who can walk into church after 30 years and be made to feel like he belongs, right? On the same extreme of that, you may have been going to church for 30 years and you think you have all your stuff together and you walk through the door like you're going to be a blessing to high. Like, guess what? We create space for you too, because you're going to realize real quick, you got your stuff too, right? Like, we all got our stuff. And somewhere along the way, we'll figure out this together. But what God has called us to is create space for one another and do life together. And so if you're wondering, what is this about? Who are you guys? We're just a group of people that believe Jesus is the real deal. We believe Jesus is the reason that we're here. We believe that he's transformed us and changing us. And we're anchoring together and going, this life really matters. We got one, let's make it count. Right? And so If you're new, welcome, extra special welcome. If you're here and you're like Michael and it's been 30 years, we are so glad. Welcome home, welcome home. One of the things we do as a family is we have conversations, and we take those conversations, specifically conversations around the Bible, we take those and we gather them into a collection. And so then we have a collection of talks about a specific topic. Now, normal collection of talks, they're about 6 weeks long, right? We try and hit this window of 6 weeks. Right now, this collection of talks feels like we are the Israelites wandering around in the desert. We don't know when it's going to end. We're just wandering and following wherever it leads. And so this collection of talks is longer, but here's the big idea, right? That Jesus is the center of all things. That when you look at this book, every aspect points forward to Jesus, back to Jesus, and to a future with Jesus. Like, all of it is connected. And so we're just leaning into that and rallying around this collection going, and I can even pinpoint in your life that if you go, John, this area of my life is really messed up, then I'm going to come to you and ask, is Jesus the center of that part of your life? And I can guess that he's not. Because when Jesus is the center, it doesn't mean things are easy, but it does mean that I'm not destructive in the midst of those, that I'm building something and creating something forward. And so we're just leaning into that and going, okay, what does it look like as we journey through this book? Where do we see Jesus? And so if you have a Bible or you need to turn it on, whatever that looks like, we're in Luke chapter 1. While you're turning there, fragrance is an amazing thing, right? Fragrance, the idea that we can smell is amazing. And if you follow the kind of the idea of the Bible that we're created in God's image, right? And so this idea of senses, that we have different senses, but the idea of smell has such power in our life. Here's what I mean. If you've ever been to a middle school camp and you have stayed in the boys' cabin, right? There is a God-awful smell that arises from the feet of young men, right? And so one of the things that they did is they put in heated floors. You know what a heated floor is at a middle school winter camp? The gift that keeps on giving. Because what happens is those boys come in and now their shoes not only stink, but they're wet. And then they put them on a heated floor. And what does a heated floor do? It dries them out. But as it dries them out, it lets the aroma arise. Right? And so, but it's amazing that I can smell shoes and all of a sudden jump backwards to when I was a youth pastor in a middle school winter camp in a dorm with a group of boys that didn't believe me that their feet smell, right? I mean, smell's an amazing thing. I mean, think about it. Anybody, you've been to Disneyland, you went to California Adventure, and you went on a ride called Soaring. Anybody? What smell do you remember? Oranges, because you went over the orange groves, right? Like all of a sudden, you're right back where? Sitting in that seat and you're soaring over America and you can smell coming at you the orange groves. So smell's a phenomenal thing. I mean, think about it. You step into your backyard. Somebody's barbecuing, right? And then if you're that guy, you stand there going, I think it's four neighbors over. Smells like steak, right? And then what happens? It triggers emotion in you. You walk inside your house and go, babe, we got anything to grill, right? Because all of a sudden you're hungry, but it triggers emotions in you by smell. Hey, smell's a phenomenal thing. There was a gentleman named Bill Good who was a part of our community for a long time. And Bill passed away recently, but I guarantee if I showed you a picture of Bill, you'd be like, oh, that's the guy that stood next to the door and greeted me when I came in. Bill had the best smile, you guys. Big smile, loved Jesus with all his heart. He would sit at the door and he would welcome you in. And Bill would come after he got done there. He was often late to worship because he was holding the door for everybody else. And on his way in, he would always come in just praising on his way in. I loved to watch, big smile on his face, singing. Loved to watch Bill come in. But you know what Bill also loved? Aftershave. And he would pack that sucker on, right? And then guess what Bill also loved? Big hugs. And so every week, Bill would come up to me and remind me how blessed I am, how loved I am, and give me a big old hug. And then I took Bill home with me and wore him the rest of the day, right? Because there's something about fragrance that's transferable. So it stirs our emotions. It stirs our emotions. It can trigger memories, take you back. I can remember the smell of somebody lighting a cigarette takes me back to 16-year-old John, right? And the idea that it triggers emotions, that today I can walk downtown Prescott, smell somebody light a cigarette, and this inner emotion of I want one just overwhelms me, right? Because there's this reality of smell does something to us. And God knows this, you guys. God knows this. He created us. He created us with this ability that fragrance really matters. Think about it. People spend billions of dollars trying to get you to wear a specific perfume or cologne because it will trigger an emotion in somebody else that they like you a little more, that you stink a little less. Maybe that's why they like you, right? And in Luke chapter 1, God captures this into the idea of worship. We're starting in Luke, and you may be going, John, that's a long ways away from where we were last week. I want you to see something today. I want you to see how important it is, the journey that we're on, and how it connects, that how the Bible comes alive the more we understand. And so in Luke 1, verse 8, it says this, once when Zechariah's division was on duty, and he was serving as a priest before God. So what we know is Zechariah is a priest before God. He was chosen by lot, according to the custom of the priesthood, to go into the temple of the Lord and burn incense. And when the time for the burning of incense came, all the assembled worshipers were praying outside. Then an angel of the Lord appeared to him standing at the right side of the altar of incense. When Zechariah saw him, he was startled and gripped with fear. But the angel said to him, "Do not be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you are to call him John." Okay, so if you're familiar with the Bible at all, you go, wait a minute, beginning of Luke, that's like right before the birth of Jesus. And John, this John that is referred to as John the Baptist, who was the forerunner for Jesus. So we're essentially into the Christmas narrative, if you like. And buried in the Christmas narrative is Zechariah and Elizabeth, who were childless. And it says that Zechariah, by lot, got chosen to go into the temple and take the altar of incense and light the incense and refresh the incense before God, which is where this amazing moment happens with an angel of the Lord. And then the angel of the Lord says, hey, there's a miracle coming. You're going to have a baby. And I don't know about you, but it can be really easy that I read this story and I skip all the temple stuff because I don't really understand it. And I jump straight to, this is amazing. They're having a baby. That's a miracle. They were old. God did this for them, right? So it's something that happens when we don't understand how the narrative, the grand narrative fits together. We miss pieces that are vital. Like the fact that God is having this priest go in and God is having them put incense before God. What is that all about? Well, it should tell us something that God, there's something about the senses that God cares about within our worship. If you turn to Exodus chapter 25, we read these verses last week. Then have them, speaking of the Israelites, have them make a sanctuary for me, and I will dwell among them. Make this tabernacle and all its furnishings exactly like the pattern I will show you. So if you're here last week, we talked about this idea that God is desperate to be with his people. But as sinful people, God had to create a way. So the way he creates a way is he creates this thing called the tabernacle. And the tabernacle is essentially God's dwelling place, his temporary house, if you like, so that he can be in the midst of the people. So to help you kind of understand what this looked like, I drew some pictures. This is an overview of, it's a very rough description, by the way, but an overview of what the tabernacle was. So the tabernacle was temporary. So when the Israelites moved, they could pack it up like a big tent, carry it to the next spot, set it up. But when they set it up, they had to set it up the exact same way every single time. And so what that looked like was that they would camp around according to their tribes. Now, some people believe that and interpret that when they camped around in their tribe groups, that it actually created the shape of a cross. There's no proof of this. There's just an interpretation. But what we do know is they camped around all sides of the tabernacle. And then it continued to go out from there. So at the center of their entire encampment and living was the place that Jesus's presence or God's presence was. And then here's what happened with their tents. They had to have the opening of their tent face the tabernacle. And so when they got up in the morning and they got out of their tent, what's the first thing that they would see? God's presence with them. What were they reminded of? That God is with us and he's here. And then the next thing that would happen is that when they wanted to go in and worship this God, you'll notice on the front side of this, because it always had the face to the east, the front side of this, there's a gate. It was curtains that opened. And so when these curtains opened and they could go in, one of the important things about the gate is this, that there was only one, that you couldn't go in any other way. Which if you're familiar with the Bible, what you jump to then is you go, wait a minute, John 10, Jesus says specifically what? I am the gate. So a connection point then is, wait, this gate was set up that there was one way to worship God. And so now as they entered in there, there was now another altar in front of them. So here's an overview of what that would look like. And so you would walk through the gate. On the left is the gate you would walk through, and the first thing you would see is the altar of offering. We'll talk about that in a minute. But what's symbolic is this. Just by looking at that, look at the gate on the left side, all the way to the right side, inside that little building shape, is what we talked about last week. There are multiple layers between you and God. And now the first thing, I get through the gate, and the first thing that's expected for me to be in the presence of God is that there is an offering made on my behalf. And all of this was supposed to be a picture of Jesus, right? And so the idea of the offering, you instantly go, well, Jesus is our offering. And then right behind that is a wash basin. And the priest, so Zechariah that we read about, Zechariah would have taken water, he would have washed his hands, washed his feet before he could enter through the curtain into what they called the holy place, into the actual structure part of this tabernacle. And so he had to be cleansed. Well, Jesus is our living water. Baptism is a symbolic of what? That Jesus has cleansed us by the washing of our sin. And so you would get inside the tabernacle, and when you entered in, on the left side, there was a set of candles, right? 7 burning candles or lamps. On the other side, you would have a table with 12 pieces of bread. And those 12 pieces of bread represented the 12 tribes of Israel. And so what happened was, just by walking in, the 7 candles, 7 is the number of completion and also of blessing. God's blessing in the form of light, it was a reminder that God's blessing was over the entire tribes, the entire nation of Israel. So God's blessing was on it. It was a constant reminder every day that God's blessing is on you. And so then you would step forward and you think about light, right? Jesus is what? The light of the world. You think about bread. Jesus is the bread of life, he said. All of this is connected to give pictures of Jesus. You get to the kind of taller looking, and it's another altar. It's the altar of incense. So when we talk about Zechariah and we talk about him getting to the altar of incense to do this offering of incense, this fragrance, the fragrance that God gave them, he gave them specifics how to mix it. You think God doesn't care about how it smelled? He gave them the exact things. He's like, it is not going to smell like middle school boys in here, right? Like, it's going to smell. Middle school boys are like, why are you picking on us? Because it's just fair. So I have a middle school daughter. I can pick on you. So there you go. But the thing was, is they go in and the fragrance mattered to God on this altar. He set it up this way with them, that this is how that altar was to be used. Exodus 30 verse 6 says this, put the altar in front of the curtain that shields the Ark of the Covenant of the Law before the atonement cover that is over the table or tablets of the covenant law where I will meet with you. So if you were here last week, we talked about that box that was behind that last curtain that's called the Ark of the Covenant, right? And on top, you have the atonement cover. And we talked last week how Jesus is our atonement cover. Well, when you get to that curtain, right in front of it was this altar, right? And so then it says, for them, Aaron, who was the high priest, must burn fragrant incense on the altar every morning. When he tends to the lamps, he must burn incense again when he lights the lamps at twilight, so incense will burn regularly before the Lord for the generations to come. So what are they told? Here's what this altar looked like. I think we have a picture of it. So it was taller in nature. And what would happen is they would come in the morning and they would light the altar of incense, make sure it was refreshed, make sure it kept going. And what that symbolized is the prayers of God's people rising to him in the form of incense. And then at twilight, so you've got this morning and night. What's burning before God? This incense, right? The think about it. The minute you stepped into this structure, what were you hit with the smell of? The incense that had filled the entire room all day long. And so now it's this image of God, the prayers of God's people, that he is in communion and relationship with them. And so it's arising before him. Fragrance really mattered to God. There's another aspect to this, and we touched on it. There's another altar. We have a picture of it. I'll show you the picture first. And it looks like this. It was 7 by 7, right? 7.5 feet by 7.5 feet in a square. And if you like, this sat at the entrance. Okay, so this sat at the entrance of, I got through the gate, and here's this altar. Now think about it for a second. This thing is burning all day long. What is the fragrance that's coming up from this space all day long? It's a reminder of what? Of offerings to God. So as your tents are all pitched around it, I know sometimes we kind of glorify the Bible and we kind of sanitize it. You need to think slaughterhouse, right? So you were surrounding a slaughterhouse that, depending on which way the wind was blowing, you were getting the smell of whatever was burning on that altar. Right, but listen to how God refers to it. Exodus 29, verse 38. This is what you are to offer on the altar. So on this 7.5 by 7.5 altar, regularly each day. So every day, 2 lambs a year old. Offer one of them in the morning and the other at twilight. Verse 41. Sacrifice the other lamb at twilight with the same grain offering and its drink offering as in the morning, a pleasing aroma, a food offering presented to the Lord. So every day, take a lamb in the morning, and every day at twilight, take a lamb. And what are you going to do with it? You're going to sacrifice that lamb. And you're going to put it onto this offering and let it burn. But what it says to God is that it is a pleasing aroma. Okay, so I need you to just visualize something for a second. That God has giant nostrils, right? He's got these sacred nostrils. And what he's saying is this burning of this offering is actually a pleasing aroma to him. When we're standing around, and if you were camped there going, this smells anything but pleasing. And so it makes you wonder, right? Like, is this just archaic, John? Is this just outdated and out of, well, listen, God was what? Trying to dwell with them, and they were sinful. So guess what this lamb represented every single day? The sins of the people. And the sins of the people were put on and offered to God, a cleansing, right, through this lamb. And the blood would be used and done specific things with it. But why? So that God could dwell, because he cared that much about being with his people, that he made a way every day, which if you looked at religions around it, they were sacrificing people. So this was way better than sacrificing people. This God seemed really compassionate and gracious by letting you use a lamb and not your firstborn, right? And it says that you would come in every day, come in, sacrifice the lamb. Every night, sacrifice the lamb. And what rose up to God, don't miss it, is a pleasing aroma, right to the very nostrils of God. I know he's spirit, so don't come later and tell me you know God's spirit, right? All I know is he's got a way to smell. And the imagery that works for this message is giant nostrils. Why? Why is it pleasing to God? Well, he told them this is how you worship. There's one gate. They chose to go through the one gate, and they chose to come with what he had said is an act of worship. And it is their, I believe it is their worship that is the pleasing aroma to God. I believe it's when his people, by their own choice, step in and go, I'm going to follow what he has told me. That I believe that it is when people choose to worship him, that it is their pleasing aroma. That's what the pleasing aroma was, is that they were coming the way he told them, that they were honoring him as God, that they were saying, you are worthy. And in that moment, I think what God goes is, their worship smells amazing. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 2, or verse 1, Paul's writing to the church in Ephesus. He says this, follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children, and walk in the way of love, just as Jesus loved us and gave himself up for us as a what? Fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. Who is Jesus? Jesus is your fragrant offering. Jesus is your fragrant offering. That when Jesus went to the cross and Jesus took on your sin and your shame and your guilt and your separation from God, and he stretched out his arms by choice, he gave himself up for you. He chose to do it. That when he stretched out his arms and he dies and he gives his life as a sacrifice, it says, that the nostrils of God went, that is fragrant to me. That the aroma was pleasing to God because it was dealing once and for all with the separation of you and God. That there would never again be separation. There would never again be another lamb offered. He was once and for all, he was your fragrant offering that was offered to God. And God goes, I am pleased. I am pleased by the fragrance of my son. But look at what happens to us. Because Paul, writing to the church in Corinth, he says this, chapter 2, verse 14. But thanks be to God, who always leads us as captives in Christ's triumphal procession, and uses you to spread the aroma of the knowledge of him everywhere. For we are to God the pleasing aroma of Christ among those who are being saved and those who are perishing. To the one we are an aroma that brings death, to the other an aroma that brings life, and who is equal to such a task? So what we're told, right, is that when Jesus died and we're placed in him, the language they use is in Christ, that part of being in Christ is that he now lives through you. And the fragrant offering that Jesus is, now you are the fragrant aroma of Jesus everywhere you go. That there's not a moment in your life that you are now not this aroma that should represent the person of Jesus everywhere you interact. Hey, think about it for a second, right? You came here this morning. Well done, by the way. It's a battle. I get it. You got to fight through kids that don't want to be here. You got to fight through your own emotions. You got to fight through being hungry. And you made it. And as you walked up that sidewalk, I hope you didn't have to open a door, by the way, because I hope there were people that held every door open for you and said something like, good morning. And I hope what you started to get a scent of is what? This is different. This is different. This smells like Jesus. And I hope what you gave back was a pleasing aroma of Jesus. And as you went and got coffee maybe, and somebody served you and you said thank you, that what happened is this aroma of Jesus, this fragrant aroma is just building, right? And you came in here and you probably didn't get the seat you wanted because there's too many people, but you have your seat, you know, but maybe you got your seat today. And the joy that was in you of finding your seat Or maybe you're sitting next to somebody that brings joy and you got to be here, and then you started to worship. And as you start to lift your voice, this fragrant aroma begins to build. And as you sit through this, right? You sit through this moment where hopefully the Holy Spirit's talking to you and he's going to challenge you and he's going to move you to worship. That hopefully what's happening is you're being reminded of how important your life is every moment. That as you enter into worship, when I'm done and you get to lift your breath and give it back in an act of worship, that what is actually happening is that to the very nostrils of God is a pleasant aroma from your worship. But don't miss what worship is. You're going to leave here and you're going to drive on your way out, and you get to bless somebody with the fragrant aroma of Christ as you're leaving instead of a finger. Right? You get to bless. The aroma doesn't stop because you leave here. You get to go hopefully to somewhere to eat. Maybe it's a backyard barbecue that somebody's invited you to. Maybe you're putting on the barbecue. Maybe it's somewhere else. But all the while as you're interacting with people and you're carrying yourself, the fragrant aroma of Christ is oozing out of you. That as you somehow make it home later and you somehow interact with people, that what should be left is the fragrant aroma of Christ, that as you lay down tonight, that what covers whatever space you lay in is the fragrant aroma of Christ. That's what we're called to be. That just like here, it was day and night, right? They were in there putting incense. They were in there doing the altar. What? Day and night, night and day. Why? Because it covered every span of time. Do you realize that there's not a moment in your life that does not matter when you have been rescued by Jesus? There's not a moment that doesn't matter. Can I ask you some pointed questions? What does your parenting smell like? What does your parenting smell like? Is the aroma of Christ all over your kids? Do your kids go, what is that smell? And what they're actually experiencing is the person of God oozing through you to them. What does your marriage look like? Is your marriage defined by the smell of your marriage, the most intimate relationship on the planet and the hardest? Does it smell like the person of Jesus? Does the aroma that is around you as a family, do people go, man, it just, there's something about them. As you sit with friends or maybe an important relationship that you're trying to grow, is that relationship centered on the person of, I need Jesus to flow through me to you? Because if not, I will be everything opposite and anti-Jesus to you. Do your relationships smell like you're a user, or do they smell like, I want the best and I want what Jesus has for you and I will honor you like a child of God that you are? When you lay down, and we all got these things called devices, right, that they tell us not to sleep with, but half of us are on them most of the time when we're laying down. Does that usage of your phone smell like the person of Jesus? Because remember, it's morning and night, night and day. Every moment matters because of Jesus. What is your life? What is the smell? Because remember, smell triggers memory. And you just may be somebody today that the aroma of your life, somebody else catches. And it's been 30 years, like my friend Michael, since they've stepped in and sat with Jesus. We're going to worship, and it's super intentional. And we're going to worship around, because I don't know how you feel, but when I see what Jesus has done for me, I can't help but go, you are worthy of it all. Every single part of my life, every single part. You're worthy of it all. It's all yours. I want my life, every single part, God, to bring worth to you, to bring glory to you.
and not to me. That every single space that I walk into, God, you're worthy of it, and just give it to him. That's what worship is, right? I'm just handing it over, God. You are worthy of it all. And then the song hits a point where it goes, day and night, night and day, let incense arise. Day and night, night and day, let incense, let fragrance arise. And I would love today, church, let's just sing it as a prayer. God, day and night, night and day, would incense, would my fragrance of Jesus in me, would it arise every single part of my day? Because it matters. And so day and night, night and day, let incense arise. Why? Because you are worthy of it all, every part of my life. And you get to declare that. You get to take the breath and give it back to God. So would you stand? We're going to worship together.